Hello, this is Bianca Westwood from Gillette Soccer Saturday on Sky Sports, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lapp and I'm delighted to be joined online by Crusader striker Dermot O'Carroll. How are you doing this evening, Dermot?
Not too bad. How's yourself?
I'm very well. So as well as being a striker for Crusaders, Dermot is also a first team coach for the Crusader Strikers and a club and community development officer for the Irish FA. So you're a very busy guy.
Yeah, I've kept going. My wife is not too happy. I'm never in the house, like, but just trying to get as much experience as I can, like, to know.
So you've enjoyed a very successful season this season with Crusaders being top of the league and with only two league defeats, is it?
Yeah, it's been going really well. Well, this is we're obviously going for our back-to-back titles here this year, so it'll be fantastic, and we're still going strong in the Irish Cup as well, hoping for a potential double.
Will it be your third title in a row? Do you win it?
It would be my fourth if I get it this year. So I'll have to get my appearances up now in the last couple of games towards the end of the season. But at the minute we look quite strong at the minute, so hopefully we can hang on.
So how did you get into the game?
I left, but I played locally in Kerry down in the Republic, and then I left at 16 and went to Celtic, and I played over there for 4 or 5 years, and then played for Morecambe in England and a few teams in Scotland and stuff. Yeah. And then my wife is from Belfast originally, so we just ended up coming back here, and I just kind of played part-time as well as working there.
So how were you spotted by Celtic?
Just playing internationally underage. Probably all started from playing for the Kerry County soccer team. Soccer wouldn't be the big sport in Kerry. It would be more Gaelic football and stuff. But we had a successful side, and from there I played internationally. And then from there I was lucky enough to get trials with different clubs, and Celtic took the punt, so it was obviously fantastic for me.
Oh, brilliant. So I noticed when you left Celtic, you had some short spells at Morecambe and Airdrie.
Icelandic side, I played for Valor in Iceland.
But as well as playing, I saw that you were involved in the academies at these clubs. Was that part of the plan from the beginning, to get involved?
Yeah, I've always tried to be involved as much as I can. At Morecambe, I was involved at the community programme, just coaching one of the wee school teams and stuff locally, and it being a real local area and local club, and I lived locally as well, it suited me. So it was never something that I would have told you at 21 that I'd love to have coached, but since stepping back from full-time football, I've really been interested in trying to get back to that kind of arena coaching and then running clubs and running academies and stuff. So it's a real passion of mine now.
So did you see a difference between the way British academies worked and the Icelandic development system?
There was a hugely different mentality in Iceland. Obviously Iceland has had a remarkable success over the last few years and culminating now with qualifying for the Euros, but it's remarkable. Even though a lot of the players didn't get paid or anything like that, it was 4 or 5 days a week training, and they were super fit, really committed, really, really detailed. They were in the gym beforehand, afterwards, and it was just a different mentality, because everyone, boys, girls, parents, everybody worked out, everybody exercised, they cycled everywhere, they walked or ran everywhere, so it was just possibly a healthier lifestyle than we're used to here in the UK and Ireland, like, you know.
So in academies, do you think there's too much of an emphasis on winning?
Yeah, I think that, unfortunately, that seems to be the case. Obviously, I'm a few years out of academy structures myself in England, but even here in Northern Ireland, that there still is a very big focus on development for players for elite levels. When you forget that 90-95% of the game is purely for enjoyment and fun. Obviously, with academy levels, that's the be all and end all. Like, you've heard of many academies in England looking to produce one player a season, and that justifies how much they pay in academies. But there has to be a balance, and I think I was lucky coming through at Celtic. There was a balance, like, so.
So is the long ball still the preferred tactics at youth level? Is that something we're trying to get away from?
I think, well, as coaches are getting more courses and more education, and the changing of the guard and the different FAs in the coach education side, there is an emphasis on playing more football, playing out from the back. And a lot of younger ages now, they actually stop goalkeepers kicking it long. There may be a pass-out system where it's almost first pass is free, so it encourages them to play more football. So hopefully we're getting away from the old school long ball tactics.
Yeah, we interviewed John Curtis a couple of weeks ago, and he says in America they've stopped heading of balls to under 15, yeah. I think it was.
That's a bit radical. Yeah, I think that's to do with the concussion and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's for me, that's one of the main skills you need in football, but I understand possibly why they've been overcautious in getting rid of it. But the idea of someone going up and heading across home and you having to give a free kick out is is foreign to me, I suppose that's just the way they've gone with it.
Yeah. So how did you get involved with the Irish FA, and what does your role involve?
I was working locally, helping out clubs on a consultancy basis, just helping them develop their structures and their admin and how they do things off the pitch.
Yeah.
And then the role came up as a club and community development officer to cover all the levels of the game, from the Premier League right down to the Amateur League and women's football. So I actually applied and was lucky enough to get in. So I'm coming up on 2 years now in the role. So my day-to-day basically is trying to help clubs improve how they run, improve their structures, improve how they can finance themselves, get their hands on funding, look to secure partnerships with like local councils, local other sports clubs, and just looking to progress. Obviously, the academy structures are massive as well, so it's just looking to see if I can improve them, both on and off the pitch, and try and help them develop.
Yeah, so we've had a listener's questioning about your role with the Irish FAs from Anasa Rahman. He asks, do you find kids look for a career in rugby or get the Gaelic games before football?
In Ireland and Northern Ireland in particular, obviously there's been troubles past troubles that you wouldn't notice it now, but it's been a religious conflict for years, and unfortunately, especially in the north of Ireland, Gaelic games would be aligned more so with Catholic background and nationalist background.
Yeah.
And rugby would traditionally be seen as a more of a Protestant sport. I'm lucky in the fact that in my role and football bridges that gap. Pretty much every young person, if they're boys or girls, have played or will play at some stage football for fun.
Yeah.
Yes, you're always going to lose some people to Gaelic or rugby, which actually is in line with the school system as well. But in general, we cover pretty much everybody. So at some stage, they'll be exposed to football, and we just have to try and keep them in the game then. You know, that's the challenge.
Yeah. Right, so at youth level, what should the ratio of technical training to physical training be?
Well, see, to be honest, at the very young levels, you're looking for all your early touches, and you're just looking to build coordination and build your movement skills. Yes, you want to have the ball and as many touches of the ball as possible, because ball manipulation, unfortunately, it's almost a lost art now. People look at the physical side of the Premier League and the senior levels and think everyone has to be fit and strong, but you see, even by the Spanish or Holland or any of the German models and stuff, they're fantastic with the football, and the fitness and strength comes later in their career. So for me, it's just trying to put on games and scenarios in training for young kids that they can get loads of touches, but also maybe build on their fitness and their coordination as well.
Yeah, I listened to an interview with, but they said the difference between the Chelsea youth system and the Spurs youth system was Chelsea were looking for players who could just run, and the Tottenham were looking for players who could play the ball properly, so they were getting lots of Chelsea's rejects because they weren't big enough.
And unfortunately, that's still the case. You still hear of reports of whether it be international or clubs, and they're making judgment calls on two players at 15, 16.
Yeah.
And one player is 5'1", the other player is 5'10", but they go more often than that sometimes with the 5'10 player. But I think it is gradually, as coaches are getting educated and developing, it is going more so to being open to a smaller player developing later, rather than going for the finished article at younger ages.
So how intense do you think training should be at a youth level?
I think intensity comes with the games. And I think if the quality of games and quality of football is very, very high, then you can demand an intensity from it.
Yeah.
I think it's all about enjoyment. I can never understand youth coaches playing games or putting on drills that don't have a match or something involved, or some kind of a competitive element involved. Like any of us, if we play five-a-side, if you're 40 or 50 years of age, you still would like to win, you'd still like to shoot a goal, you still want to enjoy yourself in the traditional way of playing football. So things like passing drills, like IX squares and things like that, are great for basic technique, but you still need to enjoy yourself and playing games. So I think, yes, intensity is massive, but as long as it's in a realistic game environment, then that'll naturally progress and it'll breed competitiveness, which will bring intensity, like, you know.
Yeah, so you're also the first team coach at the Crusader Strikers, which is the ladies' team of the club.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with that?
It was a funny one. Obviously, I work within the Irish Football Association, and actually a couple of the girls who play for the senior side work for us as primary school coaches. So they're every day building up 5 to 11 year olds kind of movement skills and building in obviously a small amount of football. So I heard of an opportunity to come in with them, and they basically encouraged me to give it a go and stuff. So I hadn't much experience. I'd done a wee bit of coaching of girls at Morecambe, and then I had done a wee bit with the underage elite teams.
Yeah.
With the Irish Football Association. But it's obviously it's a new experience, but it's something I really enjoy. Coaching the girls, and in fact the ladies, because it's a huge variety in age group.
Yeah.
Is fantastic, because especially with coaches in the group, they don't let you away with kind of flippant comments, if you know what I mean. Everything, they think about everything in detail, and they take it in, and they appreciate the support and the advice. But on the flip side, then, if you're talking rubbish, they probably will tell you that as well.
Yeah.
So for a young and up-and-coming coach, then it's good, it's challenging, but it's possibly a better challenge than coaching young boys, because I'm used to that environment anyway, like, you know.
So how was the season going so far?
We finished, I took over mid-season last year, and we finished third last year, and unfortunately we lost the cup final as well, but it was a transition as well. There was a lot of younger players coming in the second half of the season, and we actually lost a couple of players to scholarships in America. But no, we're in pre-season at the minute, so we're actually playing our first friendly at the weekend here, so the girls have been really, really good, and it's a very young squad with a few experienced heads in there, so a lot of the underage international players and stuff are involved in our team, so it's just building their basic skills as well as giving them a platform to play senior football. So it should be a good season for us, hopefully.
How important do you think it is for young footballers to have a life away from the game?
Massive. From my own personal point of view, I loved playing full time, and I was very, very lucky to do so, but I couldn't deal with the mental rigours of just football. And it was probably an error by me that I didn't keep going with my education or keep going with some other kind of pastime outside of football, because I was the type of fella, if I had a bad training session, I would think about it all day for the rest of the day, sitting in the house in the digs, and then I would let that affect me for a week. While now that I'm more mature and I have other focuses in work and other things, I can shrug it off more like it's just an enjoyment thing. Like, you play football with your mates just to enjoy it. So now I try and think of it that way rather than it's a be-all and end-all. So I think if you're a young player and you're going to an academy, I think it's essential you keep going with something, whether it be 1A level, 2A levels, some kind of a pastime, whether it's even building basic skills. And I've heard of people doing like plumbing, electrician, things like that. So something to give you a focus outside of the game, and then God forbid if it doesn't work out, something to give someone something to fall back on when unfortunately a contract mightn't come their way.
Yeah, it was reported this morning that the young United striker Rushton, he was asked how you're going to celebrate your two goals, and he said, I'm not, I've got a chemistry exam in the morning.
Yeah. I actually saw that, and it was interesting to hear that Varela, the right back as well, was in the same exam. And it's fantastic to hear. And you're hearing that more and more now, because I think clubs have really bought into the fact that developing a player needs to develop the person as well, and challenge them in every way, mentally as well. So I think I heard of a boy who went from Dundee United to Celtic there recently, over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah.
He actually was finishing his law degree while still playing for Dundee United, and he just got $1 million move to Celtic. So
I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, I think it was Armstrong, I think the lad's name possibly is. He went in a deal with Mackay Stevens. So, but you hear stories like that now more often, and you see a lot of players that have degrees and they've gone through things, and they may not still be. They may take longer than your regular person to do it, because they're concentrating on the game. But I think the days of just token gesture clubs putting through players through education have gone now, and it's trying to push it as more of a focus.
Right, so I've had one more listener's question sent in from Dave. He said, both Northern Ireland and the Republic are qualified for the Euros. Is there a real buzz around the island for this
season? It's fantastic. I'm from down south originally, and I was lucky enough to play for them till I was I played under 21s and stuff. But I would love to go. Unfortunately, I can't make it to support either club or either nation. But it's fantastic because you see, even when I was younger, the Republic had a lot of success, and that meant we recruited a huge amount of players, and there was a huge amount of interest, a lot of sponsorship into the local game, and the Airtricity League locally got a huge boost from it. Northern Ireland have struggled traditionally over the years when I've been young, but it's been fantastic to see over the last couple of years, especially with Michael O'Neill in charge, that they've had a real charge. And when you're asking about the interest and how popular it is, both south and up north are hugely oversubscribed for tickets. I think there'll be more than double the amount of fans over there for tickets, I'm sure, and there'll be people just going for the atmosphere and for the trip, and hopefully they can keep going, keep qualifying for years to come. And I think in general, both up north and down south, everyone was happy for both sides to get there, and it shows a progression for the island.
Yeah. And yes, who do you think is going to do better?
I have a sneaky feeling Ireland could do well. I think I personally think the likes of Sweden and Italy they may sound fantastic and traditionally have been huge nations, but maybe I'm being blindly optimistic. But I think we have half a chance,
especially for Sweden. Northern, if you keep Ibrahimovic quiet, I think
that's it. And you forget as well, Ibrahimovic is obviously a world-class player, but he's 34, 35. So, if you can keep a player like that quiet, then the rest of their team doesn't necessarily scare you. Northern Ireland have a very, very tough group, but they have a fantastic record, finished top of the group, and nobody would have bet on that at the start. So, hopefully, from my point of view, and from everyone, most of the staff are going and stuff. So, if we could progress or at least do ourselves proud, and then go into the next qualifying phase competitive, we'd be delighted.
So before you go, do you want to plug your social media?
Yeah, well, I'm just at Dirmo87, so it's DIARMO87. I try and give my points of view on anything that's on, whether I'm playing or watching, and please feel free to follow me and give me abuse or tweet me, I don't mind, so it'll be good to interact anyway.
I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. Good luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks, William, man. I appreciate getting me on, and it's been very good. I've been listening to a few of the other podcasts as well, so keep up the good work, as they say.
Yeah, so I'd love to have you on again in the future. So.
Top man. So.